The Courage to Lead, episode 26.
You're listening to the IB4E Coaching Podcast.
Brought to you by IB4E Coaching, business coaching for executives, entrepreneurs, and small business professionals. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com.
Hey, Coach Harlan here. Welcome back to the podcast. Hope you guys are having a great week. I am having a great week, and I'm excited to introduce you to somebody I just met, and I'm interested in getting to know a lot more. Please welcome Josh Greenbaum. Josh Greenbaum of CFO Minded is a seasoned financial consultant who helps small businesses achieve market impact while staying true to their mission. After working for a Big Four accounting firm, Josh founded his company with the belief that all businesses should benefit from the financial sophistication that large corporations do without shouldering the burden. He isn't driven by the goal of getting more CEOs into billionaires club. Rather, he's passionate about supporting real people, from celebrities to companies of one, with really promising ideas to become better leaders through business planning and oversight. Josh recently published his first book, Numbers Scare Me and Other Excuses, A Business Owner's Guide to Lead Like a CFO, available at Amazon. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
No, looking forward to the conversation. I went out and looked you up on LinkedIn, and your profile caught my eye. And I love your profile where you say it was while working with a Big Four accounting firm that you looked around and realized you weren't interested in wearing khakis and drinking mediocre wine with other accountants for the rest of your career. Exactly. Having come from the consulting world, background working with Pricewaterhouse, working with Ernst & Young and some of the other groups, I know exactly what that's like. I had all the khakis in every shade of tan that there was. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Want to dive into that. Want to find out how you made that break from the Big Four and starting your own company. Talk about book writing, because I have a couple of books too. And we'll get started on all that. But first, Josh, I have some questions to ask. Listeners, you guys know these are the questions that were made famous on the award-winning show Inside the Actor's Studio, where the host James Lipton asks these questions of his guests. And if these questions are good enough for Hollywood, they're good enough for my guests. So Josh, if you're ready, I've got 10 questions for you. All right, Josh, question number one, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word is alignment. A little context. I've done a lot of work on myself over the years, and I learned about that concept of alignment. And when things are right, you know that they're right, and you have to keep following that forward.
Nice. Yeah. And we'll talk about that too, because a lot of companies, their executive team is not aligned, and we see what that does. Yeah. All right. Question number two, what is your least favorite word?
Can't.
Okay. What turns you on?
Adventure and curiosity. I think that that's really the crux of how I live my life, lead my life, and choose the things that I, you know, how I spend my time personally and professionally.
Nice. And what turns you off?
Definitely lack of communication and flakiness.
Sounds like there may be a story there. What sounds or noise do you love?
You know, I love this question. And the thing that came to my mind mostly was thinking about the sound of dirt when you're walking on a trail, be it hiking or running or anything like that. Just that peacefulness and the shuffling of the feet on the dirt. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Let's see. What sound or noise do you hate?
Honking. Cars honking. Worse.
All right. Josh, what is your favorite curse word?
Let's just say it rhymes with duck.
Okay.
I think you can figure it out.
I think they can get that. All right. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I've always thought that I would enjoy being a teacher. I think that it's something that's actually underlying so much of what I do and a lot of who I've become as a professional feels a lot like teaching. So I think that that would be something very fun for me to embark on one day.
Okay. And what profession would you not like to do?
Anything Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, where the schedule's out of my control. Doesn't really matter what it is. Call it Pricewaterhouse.
There you go. All right. And finally, Josh, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I would love to hear that looked fun.
Okay. Good job.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Josh, we will get back to all these questions, find out about the story behind the lack of communication and other good things. So folks, stick with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
Imagine having a trusted group of CEOs at your disposal. Imagine having your very own peer advisory team who could work you through the problems and questions in your business before you had to make those difficult decisions. Imagine you had a group of advisors that had your back and met for the sole purpose of making you successful in your business. What would you be able to accomplish then? Well, you don't have to imagine anymore. You can have that and more when you join my Business Success Mastermind Group. Join my Business Success Mastermind Group today. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com/mastermind.
All right, we're back with Josh Greenbaum. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. All right, so tell me about your background. How did you get into working as an accountant, I guess, for the Big Four?
Yeah. So, you know, it was a funny thing. When I started my education, I was a statistics and math guy. And ultimately, I didn't see a clear path professionally of anywhere that I wanted that to take me. So I actually stepped back during college and started working just little jobs here and there. And what I realized is I love the application of numbers to business versus numbers from a very, you know, a scientific, highly mathematical perspective. So that drew me to accounting per se. And from there, I think just the business world, the business education in itself really excited me and continued to pursue that. And ultimately, PricewaterhouseCoopers as a firm and the Big Four in general attracted me because it was almost the lack of decision. It was the opportunity to go into a wonderful professional environment where I can learn the skills, learn the professionalism, and not choose a particular company because I would get that opportunity of exposure to multiple clients.
Absolutely. That's one thing I loved about consulting is you may be doing the same thing, but each client is a little different. Their needs and requirements are a little bit different and stuff, but you're honing your skills, right? To where you step into something, it's like, oh, I did that at X. I know exactly what's happening here. Nice.
Definitely. Between that and I think just seeing different personalities, different working styles, you know, it really exposed me to a lot and exposed all of us who go into consulting to really see and understand how to work and change and be dynamic within those personalities and styles.
Nice. So Price Waterhouse, who else did you work for?
So I spent a few years with Price. I was in San Jose doing kind of the Silicon Valley thing for a couple of years and then transferred to Los Angeles where I dove into the entertainment world. And from there ended up at a small CPA firm. I wanted to check out that environment. I wasn't sure if financial auditing was going to be my future forever. So tried out another firm before I made that ultimate decision to depart from audit. And it was actually while I was there that we got a project in to build a financial model for a startup company. Okay. And that's where I really found myself falling in love with this particular element of accounting and started to really see a lane of the creativity, the entrepreneurship, and how numbers and finance fell into that world. So that was really the spark that started to light within me.
Interesting. Now, I don't know if I'm unique or if I'm like most people, but when you talk about accounting, it seems so structured. And yet you, in the same sentence, you said creativity. And how do those two go together? Because I understand people that love accounting, they love and they see the creativity and they see, right, how they do things. To me, it just seems like straight lines.
Sure.
What's the creative side?
It's interesting. There's actually two parts to what you just asked that I feel deeply about. So one, which we can come back to, is the notion that there's so many different accountants. The word accountant, the title accountant, the profession accountant is so general. And there's so many layers within that between CPAs and bookkeepers and CFOs and all these different roles. So each thinks differently, operates differently. So then going to the other point, the creativity aspect of it, to me is you do have this very formulaic, scientific, call it, aspect of accounting, which you're referring to. And then the creative side comes into really engaging with the business owner and understanding what they want to do, what they want to accomplish, how they think and describe and talk about their business, and then layering in those elements of accounting. And quite frankly, probably more so finance, in that, how do you think about pricing? How do you think about engaging with customers, subscriptions, all these different ways that you can slice and dice a business? And it's hearing that, it's taking it, and it's then translating it into, again, back to the formulaic of accounting.
Right. And so you made that distinction, accounting and finance, right? Because accounting is just kind of putting things where they belong, but the finance is actually running the business, right?
100%. You know, accounting is really, you know, call it yesterday and backwards. You're looking back at the results of, and finance is today and tomorrow, whereby where do you want to take this? Where is this going? What does a forecast look like? Cash flow management. None of those are real, which I'll put in kind of air quotes.
Right.
But they're really the assumptions leading forward, which by you then manage your business and achieve a certain result.
Absolutely. And so you helped build a financial model for a startup. What was that about? What was that
startup? So that was a lot of fun. That was, I got involved with a very well-known celebrity at the time. He was one of the top, him and his group was one of the top artists in the world at that point in time. And it was early on in technology, whereby YouTube had just come out. It was a new thing, right? And so we're kind of talking 2006. And he wanted to put together his version of a social network. And obviously this is all, you know, normal thoughts of today. But back then it was me being able to jump in, to the credit of the people who I worked with, who plugged me into understanding how does advertising work within technology? What are servers? How do they work? How do you, you know, look at all these different components? How are people being compensated through royalty opportunities and all these different components? So again, it was me then taking my brain of Pricewaterhouse, Silicon Valley and technology and what I was exposed to there, married up with the exposure that I had through entertainment and working with studios, movie studios, things like that, and just understanding both those worlds and combining it into this kind of social lifestyle network that was being built. So that was, you know, a true blessing to really do something on such a huge scale, whereby it was in, the initial investor was coming from a big music label that everyone would know. And it was really like on this grandiose scale. So it was fun at 27 years old with no clear vision yet of where I was going to have that kind of be the first step into the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, are you contractually prohibited from naming who this was?
I don't think so. I mean, the company no longer exists, and it's right, but it was with Will.i.am of the Black Eyed Peas.
Okay.
And nice. You know, the most, you know, to me in the larger picture, the most important aspect of that, thinking about my progression towards consulting, is that project actually came through his business manager.
Okay.
And business management as a whole was a foreign world that I had never even heard of, which is always so interesting because you back up to college and recruiting and thinking about where you want to go with your career. Yeah. And here's the whole aspect of accounting, which is something that didn't even exist in my mind. And it was a very client heavy, very engaged type of a CPA firm. And it was just so much more fun for me to see that and be able to dive in and wrap my arms around everything that these people were doing versus just doing a financial audit or just financial statements.
Exactly. And the other thing you brought up, and I love this about the consulting that we did, my wife and I, you learn so much about different industries. You know, we work in pharmaceuticals and manufacturing, and you think, okay, I'm here to do this job. But really, if you keep your eyes and ears open, you learn so much that you can then apply to other places, you know?
Completely.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. All right. So now you've been doing this for a while. At what point did you say, I think I want to go out and do my own thing?
So, you know, I joined the business management firm and really started to, you know, get my feet grounded with what is that world, because I, again, like I felt attracted to it. And we were talking about at the very beginning, alignment. Mm-hmm. And so moved in that direction. And while I was there, what it then opened up for me, similar to not ever having heard of business management, I then saw all these worlds of entertainers, celebrities, and, you know, the people around them who were making money in such interesting and nuanced ways that I'd never even seen before. And again, coming out of like this traditional corporate world that I had been exposed to, seeing people investing in restaurants, nightclubs, music festivals, like just all these different things. And it was so intriguing to me. And again, understanding more and more that accounting still exists. It doesn't matter what you do. There's always numbers. There's always money. And I could then start to play in these worlds. And I wanted to see how they operated and whatnot. So ultimately, one of the clients of the firm wanted to break up. They were a break off, I should say, from the management firm. And they were a growing company. They were the first DJ management company in the world called Dexstar. And they had a lot of high profile people associated with it. It was a lot of fun. And so I made the leap. And that was really, that was my first jump into consulting. And so that was what I consider the start.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And so CFO minded, tell me about that. Is that fractional consulting?
Yeah, you know,
financial?
Yeah, it's fractional from the sense that I'm not your full-time CFO, right? But really the name, where the name came from is the through line that I feel like I've always seen at clients. You walk in day one, and I think this is true for any consultant in any realm, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not. But if I'm going to walk into a brand new client, something wasn't going well, right? And for me, from my world, it was always my bookkeeper doesn't know what they're doing, or I have no transparency into my numbers, you know, speaking kind of generically. But there was always that level of unhappiness or being or feeling like they're in the dark. So the name CFO minded, the brand of CFO minded, the book that I wrote all the way through was to say, you know, tongue in cheek, but I want to call BS on this, because if you're the business owner, you don't get to blame a bookkeeper for not doing well. You need to understand, you need to know what to ask for, know what they should be delivering. You don't need to know how to be an accountant, but you need to be mindful enough to operate your business effectively. So that was really kind of the essence of where the name came from.
Good point. Yeah, because so many business owners that I work with, they don't know. They assume that the CPA is doing everything they need to do. They assume their bookkeeper is doing things the way they need to do. And they look at a report and they don't really understand what it is they're seeing. They don't know how to look, you know, and forecast out in the future as to what they need to do. So how do you help these? How do you help these CEOs and think more like a CFO?
Sure. So whenever I engage with any new client, to me, step one is always just going in and starting with where they are, because I'm of the opinion that right or wrong, they could be doing every single thing wrong by the book. Something's working. They have a functioning business, right? So out of tremendous respect, let's just start where they are. And then second to that is really just defining what their goals are, right? What are their pain points? What are their kind of fires that they need to put out, and start there. From there, it becomes a process of digging through the different aspects of, I use the financial statements as kind of my outline or agenda to walk through, in that we're talking through revenue, expenses, the assets of the company, the liabilities of the company. And through that, what my hope and objective is that it then drives for a complete conversation of all aspects of the business. And secondly, I would hope that that then starts to educate that business owner on how to look at these financial statements and what they mean. And so that becomes a starting point. Second to that, for me, becomes then understanding how the business owner thinks about the business. And as an example, some people are very revenue driven. They want to know top line, what am I selling? Some people are very profit driven. How much am I taking home at the end of the day? Both are correct. So then therefore, I need to understand how you, the business owner, looks at your business so that any reporting that you're getting and all conversations that we're having are driven towards how you think, because that's all that matters.
Nice. Yeah. And getting them to a point where they start asking questions.
Exactly.
You know, to me, that's exciting. Now you're starting to think, right? So yeah, we'll talk about kind of where the money comes from. With a lot of smaller businesses, you know, how many leads do you get in? How many people are calling, you know, asking for things? How many of those do you convert to an actual paying customer? How many customers do you have in the year that generates your revenue? You know, and then what are your expenses? What is your net profit at the end? And they start looking at those numbers going, wow, could I improve this? It's like, all right, now we're into it. You know,
100%. And even to add to that, not just how many leads do you get, but when you close them, when you invoice them, how long does it take them to pay?
Yep.
Are they all paying? Are you collecting everything, right? Like, it just opens up a very comfortable dialogue, I believe, that again, leads all the way back to accounting and the different deliverables that exist from my perspective.
Nice. No, good point. Yeah, because one of the clients I'm working with now, that was one of the things we started looking at is cash flow. And so we started looking at how long does it take them when they complete a job and then to the point they invoice.
Yes.
And that was almost 28 days, I think it was.
Yep.
Why is it taking you that long to invoice? If you complete the job today, 2 or 3 days at the most, we got them down to about 5 days. And that in turn got their accounts receivable down.
Yep.
So now they've got the money coming in. And yeah. Good. He's on it. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you shine the light on something and it improves. And then you can take 100%. That spotlight and move it on to the next thing.
100%. And you know, we'll get into this more, but with what you just said, to me, what becomes the most important is what are those 3, 4, 5 things that are highlighting how the business is doing? Maybe that's accounts receivable. And let's make sure that those numbers are pushed in front of you every month. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure you know where to look to get those numbers and what they mean. Because now that means something to you as a business owner.
Right. Good job. And that, so what's the one thing that you see most businesses are doing wrong or they're not paying close enough attention to? What would you say that is?
I think, you know, I think really the biggest thing is forecasting and thinking ahead. And that can mean a couple of things to me. Obviously, so many people, the cliche being that you're working in your business, not on your business, because
right.
As business owners, we all know how hard it is to carve out more time to do that and to create the space that you can think openly and clear-minded enough to think forward. And again, going back to those accounting deliverables, what a CFO does within that equation are thinking about pricing, thinking about the terms. Maybe you want to write into your contracts that you don't start work until you get that first payment because of cash flow, because of accounts receivable. Mm-hmm. So I think most often the greatest opportunity for people is to start taking time to think about the strategic, you know, today ahead and aligning that with their goals, where they want to be and all that good stuff.
Nice. And so that's kind of the impetus of your book, right?
Exactly.
Numbers scare me. Talk to us about the book. What was that like to publish your book?
It was quite, you know, it was every cliche that's out there, the existential crisis of writer's block and what am I doing and does anybody care, right? So, you know, all in all, it was about 2 years in the making from the initial idea of the possibility of writing a book. And then I think maybe 6 months of actually writing it and revising and going through that process.
Nice.
And ultimately, you know, where it all started for me was a vision of a framework from which I work. And what I refer to that as in the book is this notion of process, plan, path, and that everything is a continuous circle. So to start from the very beginning of a business, you have your plan, you have your business plan. Once that's ironed out, we move to path, which expanding would be your financial path. How are you going to finance that? Do you have money in the bank? Do you need to go get an SBA loan? Do you want to raise money from investors? Let's talk about what that financial path looks like. which then leads to process, which would be doing correct accounting, getting your financial statements, all those nitty-gritty accounting processes that need to happen, which then allow you to think about the future and growth and opening that second location, which to me then goes back to plan, which then how are we financing that growth, et cetera, et cetera. So that was really like the vision of the framework and my little light bulb moment of, aha, this is what a CFO is without using any technical terms. And I felt like, wow, what a opportunity for me to be able to better communicate to my clients, to my future clients on who I am and how I provide value and fit into their organization. And more importantly, how they can think about what I do, how and when to plug me in, and all those aspects.
Nice. Well, and you talk about one of your goals would be to be a teacher, right? If you had it to do over again or something you'd like to try. Do you run classes now, webinars, seminars?
I don't yet. You know, something in the future that I want to be doing is providing workshops, and primarily those will be around really thinking business strategy, so that if we were to get people in the room and think through how, like I was saying, how do you find that time to think creatively, think about the future? So to do that alongside some one-on-one coaching, consulting, to ask questions, probing questions, make you think about this versus that. So that's something that I want in the future. You know, in the meantime, what I'm working on is developing a tool set that is around process, plan, path, around the framework from which I work, that is standardizing it, because I want that to be available to businesses that have a much wider reach than I can serve.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, but I like the idea of, you know, the finance for the non-financial manager, because that seems to be a big thing. You know, people get into business because they're really good at what they do. They like their tools, or they like their the process that they have, but they don't really understand the financial side of business. They figure, if I just work hard, the money will come. If I stay open longer, the money will be there.
Yeah.
And without really understanding where that money comes from, they can't make the tweaks in their business that they need.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. So where did you get your, when you first decided to go out on your own and do things independently, where did that come from? Where did that, was it just a need? Did you see just a gap out there that you wanted to fill?
At the time, no. I mean, I don't want to say that it was naive, or, you know, more so it's probably stubbornness. I didn't see a path within the traditional corporate world that was fulfilling for me. And it just, you know, it wasn't fun. I think the quality of my work was starting to drop because I didn't enjoy the environment. You know, going back to financial auditing, you sort of feel like this police officer coming into a business that everyone hates, because one, you have to walk in assuming that everything's wrong, and you're a little, you know, maybe indirectly you're accusatory, right? So it was more so that I just started doing it. And I think it really took me years to understand the value that I was able to create. I think so many, especially consultants who work on their own, when you're within that environment of a consulting firm, you inherently know that you're providing value. Right. When you go off on your own, I think you lose context. And for me, I did. I lost context of what all the value was, because I went from working with big companies, filing with the SEC, to little businesses that were maybe doing $500,000 in revenue, $1 million in revenue.
Yeah.
And the elementary type things that I was doing in my past were huge value adds in the current, in the future. And I didn't understand that as value. And it really took me a while to hone in on the fact that, oh my God, I can really engage with business owners and translate things and speak their language while also communicating with a lawyer, with their CPA, talking about tax. Like, I can wear all those hats and be that liaison between. And that's when I really started to understand who I was as a professional, understand who I was as a consultant, and on and on.
Nice. So kind of the translator, right? Between,
right. Yeah.
the business owner. Yeah. Which again, that's the part that I really appreciate from consulting is I've worked at different companies around the country that are experiencing a lot of the same things, maybe on a larger scale, but still experience the same things that these small business owners are experiencing. And to be able to tell them, you're not alone and you're not the only person struggling with this. Mm-hmm. You know, the people at Coca-Cola and Pfizer and Unilever and these other big companies, they struggle with this too. So you're not alone. Right. Here's how we got them through it. You know, that's awesome.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because often I'll mention to a client that Coca-Cola is no different than you. Coca-Cola is just a very complicated small business, mm-hmm. right? It's yep. the same issues, exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly the same issues. So when you walk into a company to start off, are they welcoming you or are they still a little leery of you coming in?
You know, I've built my business almost 100% on referral. And so it's always been a very welcoming environment. That being said, when I've encountered a client or we start to engage, and the founder of the company, the CEO, the management team, if they're not interested in what I bring to the table, said otherwise, if they want that kind of set it and forget it, that true like outsourced, you're outside of my company feeling, right. I'm not the right fit. And it's apparent very quickly.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the arguments I have with some of my clients too. Don't meet with your CPA, your accountant once a year at tax time. It's right. too late to do anything then.
Correct.
You want to have an ongoing conversation. You want them involved in the big decisions in the company to make sure that you are staying true to that forecast, that plan, right?
Yeah. Nice. Yes.
So where did you find your courage to go out on your own?
So, you know, it's a very unsuspecting place and it came from what was intended to be an insult.
Okay.
When I walked out of a particular job one day on my parting day, I was told that I was completely replaceable. And it was an interesting moment for me because obviously ego jumps in and sure. all, you know, I'm better than that, et cetera, et cetera. And what over time, I actually did acknowledge and embrace the fact that I am replaceable. And therefore, what am I going to do with that? And similarly, to know that if a client and I are not a good fit, there's plenty of other options. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be right for everybody, and I don't want to be right for everybody. And that's, I think, the essence of where that courage came from.
Nice. Yeah, I was told a long time ago, if you can't be replaced, you can't be promoted.
I like that.
It's like, okay, then replace me, please. Yeah, let's talk about that. Have you had to walk away from clients?
I definitely have.
Tell me about that.
You know, it's never an easy thing. The funny thing with accounting in particular is you're very ingrained in someone's business and sometimes their life. So walking away is hard. And for the most part, you know, I've really driven those conversations around first me taking a step back and thinking about why is it not working? And I always keep perspective that if I'm the constant, it does work for some and it's not working for others. So what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And this might actually even be a bridge back to that initial lack of communication. If I find that clients are always canceling meetings, if they can't make this a priority, and not that I need to be number one, but they need to value what we're doing. And the sure. fact that it is timely in some regards. So I look at the characteristics and the patterns within that, I think, and identify that this isn't working for me because of the constant cancellations of meetings. And I can't seem to get in touch with you. And I really need to be able to talk to you. And perhaps there's a better solution. And that's really where I think the walking away gets easier.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I do think it's better for everyone. You know, if it's not working for me, it's probably not working for them either. There's probably pain on both sides.
Probably true. Yeah. And I had a client years ago that the only constant in all the issues was him. And he refused to see it. And it's like, until you're ready to acknowledge this, I can't help you. And that's tough, especially when you're starting off. You know, you don't really want to let go, but you know, ultimately, it's the best for them. It's the best for you, right?
Right.
So one of the types of courage that we talk about quite a bit through the podcast and stuff is intellectual courage. Having that understanding that there is knowledge out there, and the knowledge you have currently is probably not the latest and greatest, that there's probably new information out there that you should tap into and stuff. Are you a big reader? Do you seek knowledge?
I do. I always tell people I am not the most technical accountant. I consider myself an operational CFO, and I enjoy reading a lot around business, self-improvement, things like that. So that's where a lot of my reading comes from. You know, sometimes biographies, things of that nature.
Sure. But yeah, with the coaching, I always want to learn. I mean, I wouldn't recommend that anybody run a business on 30-year-old knowledge.
Right.
So I don't want to have just 30-year-old knowledge with me. I want to learn what's the latest and greatest. Who are the movers and shakers out there? What do they know? What do they, you know? So I'm always looking up stuff. In fact, I downloaded your book. I don't have my Kindle with me, but I've got your book downloaded, and I'm starting in that. And so if you were to give your book then, and I'm assuming you probably bring them into your clients.
Yes.
And show them. Where do you tell them to start? Do you tell them to start at the beginning, or do you focus on here's a chapter that I think you should get into first?
That's a really good question. I don't know if I've actually thought about that yet. I end the book with a little bit of like a how-to, right? Because the intention of the book is to inform the reader enough that they could do it, right? And so it's a little bit of a standalone. I think one of the biggest things that I wanted to convey in the book was who I am as a professional and how I look at things. And that through kind of that introduction and my story and how I arrived at the framework, so really like the introduction aspect of the book in the first chapter or so, that I think really highlights who I am as a professional and really all they need to know. Because the rest of the book and the details of the book and the framework is what we're going to get into anyway. So I don't know that it's so important for someone working with me to get into that level of detail.
Yeah. No, it's good. I wrote a couple books. The first book was not great, but it was one that I wanted to get out, self-published. It's out there. I'm a private pilot, so I use a lot of flight analogies to talk about business concepts. So the first book was called Flight Planning, A Pilot's Guide to Business Success, right? When I fly, I file a flight plan that says, here I am, here's where I want to be, and here's how I plan to get there, and how I'm going to measure my progress along the way. Same thing with the strategic plan. Where are you now? Where do you want to be? And how do you plan to get there? Yep. The second book is called Barnstorming, A Pilot's Guide to Growing Your Business, right? The barnstormers kind of created their own niche. They created their own concept for business and the tricks that they would learn and everything and how they would go about getting customers. So a lot of things entrepreneurs have to do nowadays. I love taking chapters and coming in and saying, here, this is what we're going to talk about today. You know, and I think your book, I think it's great so far. You know, what I've read, I like it. I think it does. It's very approachable. I think that it gives the information, you know, clearly and states your framework and everything like that. What are your plans with the book? Are you planning on maybe doing webinars or things like that based on the book?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the biggest thing, like I was saying before, the biggest thing that I wanted from the book, it did a couple things for me. On a individual, on a personal level, it was really the first time that I examined in great detail who I was as a professional. You know, It's so easy to just start working, to open a set of QuickBooks and just start doing accounting. And that is the commodity of our industry, right? And to really stop and think through what do I believe in? What do I tell people on a regular basis? Like, who am I? Like, I always know that I can go in, that I can sell, that I can kick off with a client, and I know that I'll do it. And I had never laid it out, right? So really the goal is I wanted, if only one thing, to just demystify a lot of the scaredness of accounting. Because to add to what you were saying earlier, presumably people are starting their own businesses to make money. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's their expertise. Yes, you get control of your life. And also you need to make money. So what complete irony that people don't look at financials or they don't understand financial statements.
Yeah.
So if only to give you a specific example, a profit and loss, an income statement, really all that is the results of the performance of your business. Mm-hmm. I think to understand it in those types of words versus, oh, I need to look at my P&L. That's what I want to communicate on a larger level. And I think, you know, through kind of plans that I'm developing into the future of making this more widely available, the process from which I work with clients, mm-hmm. what my hope is I really want to level up and create the structure so that businesses are getting what they need, so that that small business is getting what Coca-Cola gets, right?
So when you're sitting down with a business owner and looking through their financials, they're looking at their profit and loss statement, what are the questions you hope they will ask? Because to me, the asking of the question is what shows that the lights are starting to come on. They're starting to see things that don't match. What questions do you look for?
So if I were to think of three main questions, one would be revenue. Did we hit the revenue that we either thought that we would or that we should be? Mm-hmm. Number two would be gross profit margin. And we can circle back to exactly what that means because it's a really important number. Mm-hmm. And the third are operating expenses. Are there things that we're spending money on that either the owner isn't aware of? Are we spending money on things that we don't need to spend money on? Are they anomalies such as maybe like a legal bill that came up that is a little out of character? So those are the three main areas that I think are most important to focus on. And what I was saying with profit margin is it's just like the complete translation of what every single dollar means. So let's call it a cup of coffee. If you sold a cup of coffee for $4 and it cost you $1 to make, it's just really important because if you're hyper-focused on that $4, it's a meaningless number. The $3 is what's most important, which is being translated through this idea of profit margin.
Right. Good stuff. And then I know some of the clients are confused the difference between OPEX, the operating expenses, and capital expenditures.
Yes.
Right. They see OPEX or CAPEX and they think they're the same, but they're not. Can you tell us a little bit? Yeah, explain those two.
Capital expenses are really the investments you're making in your business for the future. They're generally larger expenses and there can be fluctuation, but for simplicity, we can say expenses that are greater than $1,000 that are generally tangible. So those would be an investment in equipment in your business, okay. Buying a car for the business. Intangibly, we're talking about trademarks, patents. These are things that you're spending money on that have intrinsic value longer than a year. And okay. Therefore, it's considered a capital expense. And there's a lot of, you know, nuance around it in regard to depreciation and amortization. So to contrast that with an operating expense is truly something that's going on with your operations within that time period. If we're looking at your operating expenses for March, well, you're going to have your payroll in there. You're going to have your subscription to Slack and Dropbox and all those elements. Those are just real expenses that occurred in that month. They relate to that month and there's no future benefit beyond that because you're going to pay Slack, Dropbox, people. You're going to pay for that again in April and right. again in June. So that to me is really the contrast.
Got it. Yeah. So those are the types of expenses for doing business for that month, exactly. Right? The things you need to put. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So many focus on revenue. And I've had clients that say, you know, I have a lot of money in the account. I'm going to go buy a new truck. And it's like, whoa,
right?
That money has to go somewhere, you know, because they're not setting enough money aside for taxes. They're not setting money aside for payroll. And then they buy the new truck and find themselves in trouble.
And we're right back to having a plan ahead, right? It's really understanding because if you do go buy that truck, a capital expense, that's not going to show up on your P&L. So you may see profit of $10,000, but if you want to go buy a $25,000 truck, that's fine. But also, we need to look at your cash flow and all those aspects and how it all ties into each other.
Yeah. Has the current pandemic impacted your business at all?
I've gotten much busier.
Really?
Much busier. And I think we can credit some of it early on to the good old PPP loans, mm-hmm. where I think it was the first time in my career that I've had every client within a 24-hour period asking for the same thing and needing it immediately at a point where nobody knew what was actually going on. So it was quite the like chaotic, stressful, draining moment. But, you know, aside from that, what it actually did is a lot of the conversation that we're having right now is understanding cash burn. What is my cash burn? How much am I planning ahead, forecasting cash flow management? How much money do I have? Am I getting a loan? How long will that last me? Let's now run scenarios, right? And I think it's turned into this very informal at times conversation around all these tools of, whoa, hold on. Okay, I have a client. They normally pay me a $5,000 retainer, but they're going through hard times. And I'm thinking about not deferring my payment for a couple of months, right? Like all of a sudden through conversation, and ultimately you can obviously map this out, you're having conversation around forecasting. Mm. And that I think is what this past year, the pandemic has done, is it specifically highlighted all these needs that I will tell a business owner they need to focus on. And it nice. Became more important to them, I think, than ever before.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it opened a lot of eyes. A lot of businesses just weren't prepared. They didn't have any kind of disaster recovery plan. They didn't have a recession recovery plan or anything like that. And so when everything hit, a lot of them just kind of circled the wagons, you know, mm-hmm. protect. They were pulling money out of their marketing budget to try to protect, you know, and rather than going out and doing more marketing to be more visible and stuff. And I think that's what impacted a few companies.
There's so much complexity within that too. You know, you take something like a restaurant where perhaps there's restrictions of half capacity. There's a lot of implication to what that actually means, because just because you're able to sell to serve at half capacity, going back to our revenue versus operating expenses, is that even enough to cover you? Is it more beneficial to close your doors for a couple of months? And there, you know, there's obviously ramifications to that, but there's so much nuance, and this period has really highlighted all of that.
Sure. But that's where your creativity comes in, right? Because you can exactly. run those models to show exactly. them, if we did this, here's what could happen if we do that.
100%.
Nice.
Yeah.
So back to the topic of courage, is there a type of courage you think comes easiest for you?
I think that's another great question. I think that the most courageous thing that I can do is keep perspective. And for example, and again, I think so much plays in between ego and things of that nature, but keeping perspective is what then allows you to move forward. And I think it showed up in a couple different manners throughout my career. And on one hand, I've told people that I've had my consulting practice for 12 years. On another hand, I've actually taken 2 1-year stints where I've gotten a job. Okay. And the reason for those points being, at one point, the fact that I'm 100% referral business, I had my 2 biggest clients go through exits. Mm. I realized, oh my goodness, I don't know how to get new clients because everything's referral. So I stopped and I got a job, and it allowed me to breathe and get a paycheck for a moment. And then I wanted to get back to consulting. So going back to keeping perspective, one could say that was a step backwards. I gave up my job. Or how I like to look at it is it's just a continuous path forward, right? The opportunity for me to take that year to insert myself back into a consulting firm actually allowed me to get back to those roots of seeing the interaction between people versus me by myself out there. Yeah. And I think through those, that has continued to make me a better professional.
Nice. Good job. What about a type of courage maybe that's a little bit more difficult?
So I think the courage that's most difficult goes back to value and quite literally pricing yourself.
Okay.
I think that that's something that many consultants have, not all. I've been very impressed seeing consultants who charge what they are worth. And that to me is the hardest part. And it's so important, I think, from the get-go and the very, very early on, being very clear about what are your deliverables and what are you going to charge, and having the courage to stand for that and mm-hmm. to charge that amount. Because when you don't and you do things on the cheap, it ends up cutting down your personal feeling of self-worth. It cheapens what you're delivering. And if you do get referrals, as you continue, it's hard to adjust that pricing. Mm-hmm. When you really just lay that out from the get-go and get very clear on this is what I do, this is what I cost, here's my engagement letter, let's talk through it, it really sets you up for success in the long term. And again, going back to courage, it's taking that moment from the get-go and not doing it 5 years down the road.
Right. Yeah, I was working with a client that she set her price based on what she used to make working mm-hmm. for some of these other companies. And it's like, well, hold on. You're bringing, you know, 20 some odd years of experience to the table. So they're not just buying an hour of your time. They're buying 20 something years of experience.
You know? I want to add one more thing to that, because that is like such a hot button thing for me that I didn't, as an accountant, understand early on. So earlier we were talking about profit margin. Mm-hmm. So gross profit margin, generally speaking, for simplicity, we'll say should be 50%, right? Mm-hmm. If you're that consultant and if you want to make $200,000 a year because that's what you made at your last job, your revenue should be $400,000. You should be billing and framing everything in a manner that gets you $400,000. So you take $200,000 and you're creating cushion, because as an independent person, you're going to have to pay for insurance. You're going to have to pay for your computer. You're going to have to pay for travel, all that stuff. And also you have that cyclical nature. Just because you're making 200,000 doesn't mean it's always constant. So you have to create that cash buffer and whatnot. So that alone, if an independent consultant can take anything away, think about what you want to make and base everything at double that. So you hit that 50% margin.
Exactly. No, it's a great point. I was talking with a client about, you know, what is your operating expenses for the year, your fixed costs? What do you do? Break it down to the months. Okay, this is your amount. How much money revenue do you need to bring in each month? And they said, well, that amount. It's like, well, no, you have to think about your profit. And he goes, why? It's like, because you're not in business to pay the man. You're in business to make a profit, right? You have to count that as part of it. So, you know, so yeah.
And also when you think about growth, right? I've always said one of the hardest things in business is hiring your first person.
Right.
Because with the mentality that you just described of this individual, how hard is it for that person to then make enough money to hire that person and take that leap mm-hmm. so that you're building now efficiency and being able to delegate work and all the good stuff that comes mm-hmm. from it. But if you, again, if you don't set that up from the get-go, and if you wanted to make 200, so you're billing 200, you will never be able to hire anybody. You will never be able to get additional help.
Exactly. And in fact, I encourage my clients to make sure that they're paying themselves a salary. Yes. So when they get ready to replace themselves with someone else off the street, that salary is already in, you know, they don't have to try to figure out where it's going to come from.
100%.
Awesome. So do you have any employees in your business, or is it just you right now?
I have an accounting manager who works for me.
Okay.
And she's been very helpful as, you know, as I've rolled out or brought in new clients and helping with onboarding and as I've kind of systematized a lot more of what I do, she's been a huge help with that. I've used other kind of outside resources for bookkeeping and things of that nature as well.
Nice. So if I were to bump into one of these people and ask them, what kind of boss would they say you are?
Ooh, I hope that they would say that I'm fun. I think I'm just not that typical. You know, my reputation is I'm going to show up in jeans and a t-shirt and again, throwing away the khakis and the mediocre wine. Yep. And, you know, I think it should be fun. I think that accounting is just accounting. And when you can make it fun and when you can understand what the clients are doing and these businesses are doing and the impact that they're creating, it makes the work that much more gratifying. So that's what I try to bring to people.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So what's next for you? More books?
I have the idea for the second book. Okay. I don't know if I'm ready to write it yet. You can tell me. I don't know. Was the second book easier than the first?
Yes. Because just like you said, kind of getting your thoughts out, getting your ideas out. Yeah. You know, I've been playing with what do I want kind of my focus to be? And yeah. Somebody that I was talking to, I was at a conference or something like that. And he said, well, you're a pilot. Talk to me about piloting. And I thought, wow, I could use this. Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, once you start getting the ideas out, then they start flowing. So I have a list of book titles of books that I want to write, you know, all based around this stuff. But
yeah. So I think the next book for me, what I want to focus on is thinking through, there's so much talk over all the years now about having a balanced life. And some people say that's a ridiculous notion if you're a business owner, right? There's 1,000 opinions on everything.
Yes.
But to have that balanced life, to understand what you want through life design, through taking time off, through those things, as a business owner, you have to build that into your forecast, into your budget, into your plan.
Yes.
And I want to drill that mentality and that process. And again, tying it back to the rudimentary accounting of everything to have an actionable path towards life design that financially makes sense versus the, put up boundaries and don't respond on weekend. Like there's all that stuff, but it doesn't really get you anywhere, right? Because you're back to Monday. So yeah. I want people to think bigger than that.
Exactly. Yeah. That's one of my goals is to, a business should run for you and generate revenue for you, whether you're there or not. My goal is to get my clients to structure their business, systematize their business so that they can turn the switch on and then go do other things, live their life, travel.
Yeah. Years ago, I remember somebody saying, are you a business owner or are you an entrepreneur? Yeah. And an entrepreneur builds those systems, builds that structure so that the business can stand on its own two feet versus the business owner who is accountable and responsible for every little thing.
Right. And then the next step up from that is the investor.
Yes.
Who can take that model, duplicate it over here and have this business running. And pretty soon you're sitting on a beach with a blue drink with an umbrella in it. Yeah. Just enjoying life.
Indeed.
Awesome. Well, Josh, this has been awesome. I really appreciate you coming on as a guest. Where, if people want to reach out to you, where can they get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is through my website at cfominded.com.
cfominded.com. And your book is available at Amazon and other booksellers?
Just on Amazon. I have a paperback and Kindle available.
Awesome. And any plans for an audio book?
Maybe. We'll see. I think maybe within the next year.
All right.
I'm happy enough to have gotten the book out to the world. That was a good step one.
Absolutely. Well, as soon as book two is ready, we'll have you back on the show and see how you're doing.
I appreciate you having me.
All right. No, this has been fun, Josh. I appreciate it. And listeners, hope you learned something from the discussion today. Definitely reach out to Josh if you have questions about your finances and how to be more CFO minded. And if you appreciate this podcast, share it with your family, friends, colleagues, and check back in the future because there's always more coming. That's it for me, Coach Harlan, saying so long for now.